Hope. It's one of those funny words that is actually kind of hard to describe its meaning, but we know it when we feel or experience it. My guest today is going to give us some practical pathways towards hope, and she shares why it's possible for the weary, disappointed, devastated, and indifferent. Welcome to the Making Room Semester of Faith School podcast. This podcast is for women of faith who are ready to be transformed from the inside out, to integrate their life in faith, and to begin a life on mission. This practical podcast is not just a list of how-tos, but is here to prompt you to take action and adopt the kingdom way of life, surrender to a holy God. My name is Leah, and I'm joining you in the messy middle of a surrendered faith. Come on in, take a seat. Class is now in session. To those of you who are new to the podcast, welcome. And to my old faithfuls, welcome back. Today, we're talking to Michelle Dwyer all about making room for hope. And not just that, but fierce hope, which is the title of her new book. Michelle points out that hope is not just a feeling, but it's actually an activation. And I really like how she points this out in the episodes. You have to keep an ear out for that. It's a super encouraging conversation as we dive into our first official episode of the Making Room semester. Making Room will be all about making room for the abundant life, how we can declutter the things that get in the way to make room for the good things of God. We have so many incredible conversations coming up in the next few months. And this semester, we really wanted to invite you to take action. So we are going to declutter from the inside out with the Life Decluttered Mini Challenge. In 10 minutes a day, you can take your first step from overwhelmed to a more holistic and decluttered way of living. We will begin to clear the clutter in our homes, inboxes, calendars, our bodies, minds, hearts, and spirits to make room for something greater. Are you ready? Join the 7-day challenge today through the link in our show notes. Please welcome Michelle Dwyer to the show. All right. Well, hi, Michelle. Thank you for being on Faith School. This is my first interview that I'm doing for the Making Room semester. And so I am honored that it is you because we've met in real life and because you know my husband.
It's true. And to know him is to love him. I taught him Sunday school hundreds of years ago, or at least a couple of decades.
At least a couple of decades. Yeah. Yes. No, I'm honored that you were here and that we get to talk about this because, I think that making room for hope is something that all of us really want. And we just don't always know what the route is or what the pathway is for it. So that is the title of your book, Fierce Hope. Yes. And, I was sharing with Michelle, I just think the cover is absolutely stunning and, it's a wonderful book. And so I'm excited to talk about it. And I'm also excited to hear a little bit about your first experience writing a book. What was that like?
Where do you even start? I tried years ago when my kids were little to start the book and it would start and stop and start and stop. And I was in full-time ministry and raising 3 kids and going to school too. Some of us just can't stop except for when Jesus helps us get the brakes on. You know, I've been really knowing this. I was called to this book and I was almost like, I think for years afraid that I wasn't being obedient somehow because I wasn't making it happen, but I couldn't seem to make it happen.
Right.
I guess it's already going on 2 years. Do you think COVID years are like dog years, like 1 year's like 7 years? I'm so confused about time. So I knew the Lord was calling me away from my assignment that I was in vocationally, which was working full-time at a church as an associate pastor. And I didn't know what was next, Leah, which was terrifying for me because I like structure and I love plans and I know that God works in those things. And I also know he calls us to trust him outside of those things. Mm-hmm. So as time went on, I kept thinking, I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm crazy. I love this job. Why would I do this? Man, I guess I'm answering longer than I anticipated when you told me you're going to ask me this question. But in that season, I think even your father-in-law called me once and said, I had a dream about you and you were writing a book. Have you ever thought of writing a book? And I was just like, that was the only thing I knew that God was calling me to, but it felt like a foolish thing to leave my job for.
Right.
And I'm not sure that's the only reason for sure that I had to leave my job at that time. I can see other things now too, but the only clear step I had next was write a book. Wow. Now is the time to write the book. And so my last day of my work was August 31st and September 1st, I was at my desk at 8 o'clock And for the next 4 months, my process was get up in the morning like you're going to work and sit at your desk at 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And what was that experience like? It's like every good thing in life. It was both absolutely harrowingly difficult and totally glorious. So yeah. Like parenting, like marriage, like any other really worthwhile thing you've done. Mm-hmm. I am quite extroverted, though I do need alone time and processing time. So mm-hmm. that was a solitary thing for me. It was like, I love preaching and teaching and public speaking. And instead of a feedback audience, I had a screen. Mm. Some days I hated what I wrote. Some days I deleted everything I wrote. And some days it was like a beautiful dance and it was fun and easy and I was energized. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's a long answer. That's what it was like.
No, that sounds like what I have heard the writing experience is like. Sometimes you just got to put your butt in the chair and do what you can.
Mm-hmm. And you might erase it the next day. Right. And that's okay.
Right.
You know, it's such a journey of knowing God and listening to him mm-hmm. and also letting him adjust you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. Which is what he does in whatever he calls us to, whether he's calling us to writing or anything else. It's like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want to be anywhere else, but it will be refining as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The best of things are like that for sure. You said that you had this idea for the book a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like we're all in a season where it's like, oh my gosh, we really need hope, right? We need hope in like different ways than we did in another time. But yet this is kind of an age old desire is to discover hope and to fight for hope. So I would love to know, why do you think people are so hungry for this message years ago when you first thought of it and now, like in the midst of all of the stuff going on?
Yes. You know, the compulsion to write is in me, which I think is just a sign that that's something that God has put there. Mm-hmm. The specific hope message, I unpack it a little bit in the book, how I went through this season where I was postpartum, mm-hmm. where the Lord really started to do some deep work in my life.
Yeah.
With things of the past and ways of coping and navigating life that weren't healthy. Everything was stripped back at that time so that I was desperate enough to really do some of the hard work maybe and receive from him what I needed to. And as I started to share those things, I was shocked at how much other moms around the kitchen table over coffee were just like lit up when I shared it. Wow. And I think that's when I knew I was going to write a book about the specific things I included in my book. Mm-hmm. Hope, I think that we often treat it like it's an emotion and we hope, you know, that all the things will align in such a way that we have that good positive feeling that carries us on. Mm-hmm. And the whole premise of the book is that it's not just an emotion that we might be lucky enough to have, or just not ever, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah,
it isn't. Biblical hope is a joyful expectation of goodness. So I always describe it as though faith and joy had a baby, its name would be hope. Because the word hope does contain an element of emotion, but it's grounded in something. So people that just have like a really good grounding in common sense and information don't always have joy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the activation of our faith with joy that increases hope that's really tangible and fierce. It doesn't quit. It doesn't back up.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because I absolutely believe that we should never speak, teach, write, preach, whatever, anything we haven't lived. I believe that with all my heart. And I have lived this book and I've taught it many times in different contexts. And at the time that it came to publish my book, I got a cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I, something in my soul just kind of recoiled, almost rebelled. It's like, I have already test driven the contents of this book. I don't need to do it one more time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And interestingly enough, the fact I was going to stop the publishing at that time, I just thought I'm in no place to release a book, to launch a book plus COVID, like any dreams or pictures I had of what that would look like. Now we're in this pandemic and I'm in a personal crisis, but I really didn't feel released from doing that. And neither did the people around me who speak wisdom into my life. It was like, no, this is time and God is not surprised.
Yeah.
And I laugh at how many times I didn't feel like engaging with fierce hope in these months. But the fact that I had put it out there and I knew it was true gave me a sense of responsibility to get up and partner with it. Mm-hmm. So it was a blessing to me too.
Yeah.
And further evidence that our hope is a very fierce and tangible thing that contains joy and is rooted and grounded in something powerfully true outside of our experience and our emotions.
Wow. How would you say that it was different this time, like with a cancer diagnosis versus some of the other stuff that you've gone through in your life? How is it different in terms of hope?
A lot of the stuff that I worked through in the book earlier had to do with emotional wounding, unhealth in our souls. When our bodies aren't healthy, it's a different thing too.
Mm-hmm.
And so engaging with hope when my physical body was so weak was a different kind of experience, but the principles were still the same.
Right. Yeah. Well, I love the subtitle of this as well.
Okay.
Hope for the weary, disappointed, devastated, and indifferent. Mm. And I found that indifferent stood out to me. And I was wondering if you could kind of elaborate on that, because I feel like we will often touch on kind of these heavier emotions, or we'll kind of, you know, kind of camp there. It's harder to communicate with someone who is indifferent. It's harder for them, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
it's just a different posture that I don't feel like we really talk about too much. So I would love if you would kind of go there a little bit with us.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you write a book, everybody tells you one of the questions you have to answer is who is your audience, and don't make it too broad. And as I look at that list, I'm like, is this too broad? But I would argue that it's inclusive of the human race, because I think you're absolutely right. Like, thank God we're not all going through a cancer diagnosis or infertility or addiction or, you know, the things that we can easily highlight as more dramatic. And there were years of my life that felt just like a grind too.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at our churches, and sometimes I see people sitting in the pews who have a good theology and knowledge of God, but they're lacking a dynamic, flourishing joy that I believe God has for all of us, uniquely expressed in our personalities. Not everybody's supposed to be that same kind of, you know,
right,
whatever bubbly outgoing personality you might perceive by that sentence. I want to make sure I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just another strategy that Satan uses to quench the glory that God put inside of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that awakening to a dynamic life that is hopeful, because to me, a hopeful life is very outward looking and forward momentum. That's dangerous to the enemy. So if we're just kind of sitting there, the apathy and indifference that comes with series of disappointments that are not resolved, but we're just going to keep on plugging away as good Christian men and women.
Right.
We're not dangerous. We're not on mission with the call of Christ to bring redemption to the world. We're not dangerous at all.
Yeah.
And so it really matters to me when I see those indifferent people. My heart aches as much for the apathetic who've been worn down by disappointment as it does for the people who are going through tragedy and trauma.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you said that. I feel like part of my calling, maybe more and more, that God has been showing me that it is really to make a way for people to know him better. And I've struggled with knowing how to approach people who appear indifferent. But I love how you said that they've kind of been maybe worn down by disappointment, or there's always reasons behind that posture. That can be kind of hard for me to remember because of my personality. So I'm grateful that you acknowledge that. And yeah, of course we want hope for all of those categories, the weary, disappointed, devastated, indifferent. Yeah, that's so good. One of the questions that we are really going to be looking at over this next couple months on the semester is, how do we make room? How do we make room for the abundant life? But I want to sit on hope. How do we make room for hope? Your book is so full of practical steps, but where do we even begin?
Yeah. Well, where do we even begin? I feel like in the book, I go the beginning. Yeah. Where do we begin? Partly, I think God just creates space for us and invites us into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we choose to go or not. And I think the pathway forward is always acknowledging why we're not hopeful.
Right.
The pain, the disappointment. I think one of the key parts of the book that matters the most to me, that lots of things hinge on, is the healthy lament.
Mm-hmm.
So in my family and in my story, there's lots of mental health issues and like clinical depression, very significant levels of depression. So I have a lot of compassion and a special draw there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a bubbly, outgoing personality when I'm with people. So I could rely on that to generate a sense of hope.
Yeah.
Except that it didn't have substance behind closed doors when I felt like my soul was hemorrhaging.
Mm-hmm.
But I was scared of negative or dark feelings. So we want to skip to the hope part,
right,
without dealing with the barriers to hope. And so yeah, the book is full of tools for addressing these barriers, but they all come together in that healthy lament.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting that we can structure our grieving, but the format for a healthy lament that I lay out in the book, which is pour out your heart to God, recognize the people who've hurt us in the lament, recognize yeah, the strategies of the enemy and the feelings that we have in the lament, which may be a place we're going to camp as opposed to process.
Mm-hmm.
Having kind of a trellis for that process helped me recognize that I could work through it without languishing in depression again.
Mm-hmm.
It needed that. So making space for hope for me may sound counterintuitive, but it's making space for me to process things that are anti-hopeful.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's in some ways like a daily, not that every day has things I need to grieve, but for sure once a week I need to sit down and go, what's weighing on me right now? Mm-hmm. And I can take that template or that format and process it, mm-hmm, and come to a place where my emotions are anchored to what God has said,
yes,
rather than the circumstances.
Yeah.
And I've also found that there are times when I need to go away, which isn't easy for mm-hmm, a mom and a working mom and a wife and, you know, all the people that need us.
Mm-hmm.
But I have gone away for a day or two to process some big things when I recognized I wasn't moving through them and I was feeling like I was languishing, not that it would resolve things, but my perspective on things needed to be readjusted in a way that could take space.
That's so good. So I'm doing like this inner healing program this year. You know, I've lived a really great life, like Michelle. I've had such a beautiful experience. I grew up with amazing parents. And if I were to tell you kind of my life, it would sound pretty idyllic. And yet there have been times where people have hurt me. And sure, I feel like everybody can relate to that, right? Where there is things that you don't even realize the impact of something on you and that it can actually take away
yeah,
hope. It can take away that, you know, like you said, the joy part of that hope activation and make us question. And over the last few years, but especially this last year, I felt that the making space to process, to lament, I feel like, I mean, I could talk about lament as well. I really wish that we did it better in the church, but all of those things, like being able to forgive and all of that sort of mm-hmm, stuff, man, like it just does clear out so much of that gunk that kind of just rests on us and that allows the enemy to lie to us.
Yeah.
And anyway, I love that part. I mean, that is the whole book. That is not just part of the book. It is the book. But I love that because I feel like a lot of times we want to put on kind of a biblical Band-Aid mm-hmm, and, you mm-hmm, know, not really even deal
yes,
with the gunk.
Yeah.
And it ends up that we become indifferent and weary and devastated yes, and disappointed. And so, yeah, I love that. I love that approach.
It's awesome. I think mm-hmm, the game changer for me in understanding, you know, in Matthew 18, where Jesus talks about forgiveness and he talks mm-hmm, about from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
What I have in the tool in the book, which I've seen in other tools as well, but it's like, I forgive so-and-so for,
mm-hmm,
it made me feel.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, all these people that I'd been, you know, I forgive them for years and like waiting for, you know, 70 times seven. And it's like right, this arduous religious process where my emotions never came into alignment with forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started to say, I forgive them for, it made me feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, side note there, it made me feel angry. Of course it did, but most of us know now and anger is a secondary emotion. So, okay, yeah, I'm angry. And what else?
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid. I felt insignificant. I felt misunderstood. And as soon as I began to understand the power of discovering how it made me feel, I could see the assignment to the enemy against me through this wounding. Because why do some people walk away from the same thing completely unbothered?
Right.
Well, it's what it made me feel. And Satan's really good at picking at the wounds in our soul.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find, if you start to process a bunch of different forgiveness scenarios that way, that the same word starts to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was often abandoned and misunderstood. And I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know when I'm dealing with some of that in the soul that seems to be slogging us along.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I look now.
Mm-hmm.
Did that make me feel misunderstood or abandoned? Well, I know now that's an ancient strategy of the enemy, and I can go to hope so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shorter trip the more we become aware.
Yeah.
This strategy, it's there again. It genuinely feels this way. I bring it to Jesus. I release this person of what I feel they owe me because of what they did, said, didn't do, didn't say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Jesus, what do you say about me?
Yeah.
And yeah. I know what he says now. And it can quicken my emotions. It can quicken my spirit fairly quickly compared to how long it used to take.
Wow.
And so I would say now these are potholes in my soul rather than strongholds. Mm-hmm. If I'm not paying attention, I'll go ka-dunk through the pothole, you know, but the road isn't washed out there anymore.
Right.
And so I hope your listeners are really encouraged. There's a pathway forward where this isn't just this relentless same trip, same road. Am I ever going to see any different scenery? Yes. There's strategies.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It reminds me of like the renewing of your mind. You know, being able to decipher what is a truth and what is a lie.
Yeah.
And so that it doesn't get to your heart as quickly, right? Or like those lies don't get to your heart as quickly.
Yeah. And we can focus so much on either stuffing down the lie or piling on the truth. Mm-hmm. And when you use this kind of strategy of breaking agreement with the lie and receiving the truth, it's way more effective exponentially than just trying really hard to do one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Allow Jesus to highlight the lie, break agreement with it, get it, tell it to leave your life and invite Jesus to fill that space with his truth. And then when you're renewing your mind, you're just watering a seed that he has planted, but the weeds have been pulled out. It's good.
Oh, so good. I want to know to you, what does hope look like? Like, what are we really aiming for? I know, you know, you mentioned that sometimes we think it's like an emotion, right? And then if I just like feel more hopeful and it'll feel good and, you know, but like, what does that picture of hope really look like? What are we aiming for?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I have a million different little scenarios in my mind. So I don't want to presume everyone's read the book. So I don't want to make it too quick and dirty to be actually effective, but not to belabor anything either. What's coming to mind is when one of my daughters was still in high school, either we can remember being in high school ourselves, or we have kids ourselves who might be at this stage of heightened, fragile emotions. And there was an interaction after school and, you know, she slammed the door, went to her room and slammed the door. And I don't think she meant to slam the door, but it happened on the tail of what feels like rejection when your kids can turn on you when you're really trying to help them. And so rather than react and get out here right now, we're finishing this conversation, I went to the throne room. All mothers know the throne room really well. It's the bathroom. That's where I encountered Jesus the most. And while I was there, I used my own tools. I forgive her for walking away from me and slamming the door. It made me feel like I'm a bad mom. And like it's pointless, fruitless, hopeless. I break agreement with all those lies. I release her of obligation to make it right with me. Jesus, what do you want me to know? And I just immediately had this sense that he was holding me and holding her.
Wow.
And making space for both of us to process our grief, whatever their, you know, my sorrow was rejection. Hers was whatever was going on in school that day. And there was a deep breath in that moment. He's making space for both of us. He's holding both of us. And that's where hope rose, flickers up. So that's one example that comes up to me. So I just came back out and started making supper. And you know, it wasn't long before she came out the door and just joined in with me making supper. And I didn't feel like I needed to revisit the conversation. I felt like Jesus had been doing his job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we could carry on without like hashing it to the nth degree.
Right.
And so that's an example to me of how hope is fierce, but it comes from an encounter with Jesus. It's not an emotion we generate, but we make space for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So rather than rushing in, fixing, or having my own emotional reactions, like make space for Jesus here. I am sad. This is why. Help me. What do you have for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I love that. I think that my initial reaction when I hear the word hope is like, I'm hopeful for kind of the far in the future kind of deal, right? Like I'm hopeful for eternity. I'm hopeful for the beauty that is to come, the redemption that is to come. But it, for me, I can miss that. Like in the moment, there is a pathway to hope that is a lot shorter. I don't have to wait for eternity to feel, you know, to have that hope realized.
Yeah.
So I do love that. I love that a lot. One of the questions that we're going to be asking people throughout the semester, because when we think about making room for abundant life, and I feel like abundant life is maybe a word that is a phrase that's maybe a little mysterious, and
sure,
like we might have our own ideas of what abundant life looks like. So I want to ask you, with your unique area of expertise and life experiences, how would you define abundant life?
It's so fun that you're asking me this question. I always ask the Lord every New Year's for a word for the year. And I know that strikes some people funny, as though it's like some sort of fortune telling. I don't know. I've had some really funny pushback on it. The reason I ask him, because it feels like it helps me focus on something he wants me to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And New Year's is just a reset season anyway. So it's sort of a natural rhythm.
Right.
And so this year in December, I had finished radiation treatment and I was just starting to feel good again, but I knew I was going to have surgery in January. So I was kind of in this little spot of I can breathe again, but oh no, we have another round of hard to do. And so I found myself alone late on New Year's Eve, because sometimes we're boring old people that don't do much. And I already started to let my heart go towards, oh, I wonder what word the Lord has for me this year. And it came to me almost before I was done. And the word was abundant.
Oh, wow.
And I will just be so honest, because I'm all about authenticity. I can be cynical and sarcastic sometimes. And sometimes it's just, I think I'm funny, but I also recognize it's a defense mechanism. And so I'm like, oh yeah, sure. God. Yeah. You give me the word abundant. How are you going to test me this year? You know, like Jesus and his patience with our cynical children that we are. And what came to me right away was that he wanted me to do a gratitude journal this year. And that can become a trite exercise. And I did a gratitude journal years ago when the kids were little. I didn't want it to be just a I'm pretending things aren't hard exercise or denial exercise. And what I recognized that he was doing in that assignment was helping me see the abundance in my life. Because our human experience, both our soul and, you know, the science of pain, physical or emotional, is that we really remember pain. So when my body has been weak and incredibly uncomfortable, it could be really easy to only be aware of that every day.
Yeah.
But keeping this gratitude journal has helped me recognize the abundance that's in my life. And it's not just sort of a Pollyanna, oh, never mind the pain, but like an authentic acknowledgement. Yeah. This has been a rough week. I've been fighting an infection this week. And someone brought me a pot of soup and my husband came in to check on me, and it was kindness and it was gentleness. And I got something in the mail from somebody. So like keeping track of the goodness that is also present in my story has actually filled me with awe and wonder of how much abundance is in my life.
Wow.
When if I wasn't paying attention, what I would see in this season is a lot of devastation and loss.
Yeah.
So it's not an either or, it's acknowledging both, but oh my goodness, recognizing the presence of God in our suffering is actually hope.
Yeah.
We are not abandoned. Everybody's suffering in some way. Everybody is. But finding and feeling his presence in it is abundance.
Yeah. Wow. I love that so much. That's such a great answer.
Oh, <once. laughs> I'm grateful.
Yeah.
He, highlighted it and told me, he gave me the tools I needed for this season. He doesn't leave us just to see how we survive.
Totally. Yeah. Never forsaken. Right. Like
never.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes I feel like my picture of God has been years ago was he threw me in the pool to see if I could swim. But it's way more. He's in the pool with his arms open saying, will you jump and trust me?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. Oh, he's so good. And I hope that as people hear this conversation and as they're reflecting on it, like we're not alone. I love that. We're just not alone in any of this stuff that we're going through and even having to process some of the hurt that we've gone through. God has not abandoned us in that processing either. And so, yeah, just keep leaning into him. That's so good. I've loved this, and it's been such a treat to talk about your book and to just be able to chat with you. We have a few concluding questions that we like to ask people at the end of the episode. So one of them is, did you have any resources that you used or any resources that are related to hope that you would recommend to us? And of course, your book included in that as well.
Yes. Thank you so much. I have recommended resources at the back of the book. There's kind of two things. I love books, so I'm a voracious reader. And I thought, if I could pick one to recommend, which is a hard thing for me to do because I have lots of good ones. Mm-hmm. I would say The Gift of Being Yourself by David Benner is a must read for everybody. And it's quite thin and super practical, but it's like being mentored in your spiritual journey by a wise person. I love that book.
Yeah.
Helped me deal with some stuff. So it'd be just a different voice. I also recommend there's retreats that you can go to where you engage with others and activate. And so some of those are LL retreats, E-L-L-E-L. I recommend those to everybody. There's a Father's Heart retreat in Calgary this summer. That's a good one. There's something about we want to do the hard and painful work by ourselves in isolation because it feels safer because we have experienced pain in community.
Right.
But some of the best moments that have been catalytic in my healing and breaking through into freedom and hope is journeying with others. So I would really encourage people to find those groups. They can be like away retreats or groups that you walk through stuff.
Yeah.
Really makes all the difference. It's a risk, but it's all the good restoration of what's been lost happens in community as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What is a spiritual practice or discipline that you have found really life-giving right now?
I got ahead of myself with that question because you did warn me ahead. And I told you about my gratitude journal, but for sure, that has been that daily sitting and acknowledging this is what's hard, but this is what's really beautiful and good.
Oh, so good. So good. I'm tempted to do a gratitude journal. I just feel like I can't keep on top of all of that stuff, but I know that so many people are so good at it.
It's a nice book, open with a pen, right where I drink my coffee in the morning. And it's one line. I don't do the big, sometimes it goes on to two lines because I find so many things that I want to just make note of. Because I'm finding as I flip the pages back already, I'm like, how rich and blessed am I?
Right.
So, but just point form. It doesn't have to be, the eloquent naming of goodness, just your own memory. My daughter called. The sun shone in the front window and I love the blue sky.
Yeah.
Whatever your gig is, whatever it is that awakens joy in you, and it doesn't have to be fantasy, and you don't have to edit for someone else thinking it's cheesy.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Right?
Yeah. All right. If you could assign one piece of homework to my listeners, because this is faith school, we're going to give people some homework. What would it be?
I can't just say, read my book.
Well, of course that.
Yes, but no, I don't want it to sound all, The thought that came to my mind is go for a walk and make space for Jesus to talk to you. Resist the urge to put in the, your earbuds and listen. I love to listen to podcasts while I walk.
Yeah.
And do housework, but just give yourself a half hour space to talk to Jesus and say, what do you want me to know? Yeah. How do you feel about me? Ask him questions like that. What do you like about me?
Yeah.
We often get caught up in very much more serious religious practices, which is fine. There's a place for all of them. I'm not disregarding them. But some of those questions are like really brave. Jesus, what do you like about me?
Totally.
What's making you smile today about my life?
I love that.
I think of it as a friendship as opposed to an assignment, a checkbox, a to-do list of religious practices.
Totally.
Go for a walk with Jesus.
I love that. I am really bad with like, okay, God, here is everything that we need to go over today. Here's the agenda.
I get it. I am right there with you. That's why I think this is a good spiritual practice.
It absolutely is. All right. Last question is there anything else that you would like to share with us? A last encouragement, really anything at all, anything that comes to mind.
I think, I long for everybody to know that they're so deeply loved, like right here, right now, today, in this moment, before you cross another thing off that list or get another practice down pat or work through any kind of tools, just right now, take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. I am so loved. And actually God says, I'm delightful. It's in scripture. Mm. I am delightful. You really are delightful. And God is as invested as you are and more in your journey of flourishing. He loves you. He invested everything in that.
Oh, so good. Thank you, Michelle, so much for being on here with us. And I'm just excited that you're my first interview of the whole semester and first video podcast.
Well, I'm just so honored and delighted to be invited to talk about this. It's my passion. Thank you so much for having me.
No, my pleasure. Thank you, Michelle, for coming on the show and sharing your experiences of hope. Friends, you can and should grab a copy of the book Fierce Hope through the link in our show notes, as well as Michelle's podcast Further Up, Further In, as well as any other resources that we've mentioned in the show. Of course, every single episode, you can find all of that good stuff in our show notes. Next episode, we have Deanna Mason on the show to talk to us about making room for rest. This is a very practical and a very heart-centered episode that I really think that you're going to like, especially if you're feeling just as worn out and just as tired as so many of us are. So follow along on any of your favorite podcast players so that you don't miss an episode. If you want to catch me on the socials, you can find me at leah.rempel or at faithschoolpod on Instagram, or you can subscribe to our new YouTube channel, Faith School. I'm happy to continue serving you on those platforms. Thank you for spending a little time with us today at Faith School. We are praying that you feel fully surrendered today to the God who made you, loves you, and wants to partner with you. Class is now dismissed. Go out there and reveal His kingdom. I'll see you next time.